A lot of creators are coming to the conclusion like, oh, actually running a business is really hard. Most people can't actually succeed at becoming a creator if they don't post every day for like 100 days plus. They just don't do it. I'm starting a brand. I'm like, I don't expect to hit where I want to hit with it for like 6 or 7 years. And that's completely fine. And I plan like that. But then you look at it like, all right, if I get to that point 6 or 7 years from now where I'm at this operating basis I want to, do I want to turn that over? Or do I want to be like, hey, is this something I want my son to do in 20 years? I think we're thinking a little bit longer, which we should think about because we're probably also as a generation going to like live extra long, which is a whole nother addition to this, right? We're like, okay, what do you think about when you can still work at 75?
Welcome to New York, by the way.
Thank you. Oh, I love being here. I lived here for 5, 6 years.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But being back, you just get that energy.
Right. How's Orange County?
Wonderful. I mean, we're a little bit south of the fire, so we have like all the fallout from it, and people have had, we know, with their lives kind of turned around, but didn't actually have to deal with it. But Orange County is wonderful, man. Best place in America. Basically, it's close as you can get to Hawaii in the U.S.
Yeah, good vibes. Yeah. Beach vibes. Do you surf?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And so I paddleboard most weeks. I stopped really surfing and foiling, so I had some injuries, but I'm on the water all the time.
Where is that rank in terms of priorities with the content?
The content is definitely a higher priority, but like every week that I can paddleboard is a good week. You know, as you get older, you start to notice like all the little joints and stuff in your body need a way to work out, and that's a good way.
We were just talking about this. Alex is a big rock climber, and there's an American Ninja Warrior like facility in Brooklyn that I was just at. I had tacos, saw it in Greenpoint, and like doing monkey bars, and I was like, I could die at any second here.
Just taking life in your own hands, you know?
Yeah. Well, excited to chat and sit down and talk about creator stuff, luxury stuff.
Yeah.
Agency life.
My favorite topics. Yeah.
Yeah. stuff you're preaching all day. I'm curious, like for you, what is the, you know, obviously you have valuables, by the way. I think you did a great job with the business and how you're growing it. Like where are we at in terms of like the creator cycle? Like
it's funny, Mr. Beast and Colin and Samir just had a video come out where he was talking about, Mr. Beast was talking about how creators shouldn't start CPG brands, which is something I saw that.
It
can at least slightly resonate with. But we're at an interesting point in the cycle where we're realizing a lot of creators are coming to the conclusion like, oh, actually running a business is really hard, which is the case for anybody. So I think it's an interesting point in the cycle because still having an audience gives you a leg up to do anything. Start a brand, succeed in honestly, whatever you want to do, but it doesn't solve all your problems. You still have to operate and have a business. So I think a lot of people are now just rationalizing what kind of business as a creator I want to have. And then on the other side of this, all these people that want to start a business are like, should I be a creator first? Or do I document the journey? Or what do I do there? Realizing the power of this. And so I think we're just entering into a more mature chapter.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. I saw that some of those Mr. Beast highlights where he's like, don't start a CPG company. Like, you can be making so much more money cash flowing just brand deals,
yeah.
Which I think for by and large, like for probably most cases is true.
Yeah.
You know, at the agency, we work with a lot of, I would say, I wouldn't call them creators, like pure celebrities.
Yeah.
They have like, you know, big followings, but they're not like natively creating content. And I think I see a lot of the pitfalls there with those CPG operators who aren't the celebrity and they, you know, are basically hired guns that are trying to like materialize a cash flowing business. And that's very difficult.
It's completely hard. But then I look at some of the best examples, I feel like, of standout brands. And like Goodles to me is a super standout brand. It's like a celebrity, like 1000% celebrity driven brand. Great idea. Would that idea have succeeded with its velocity without the celebrity? Probably not.
Yeah. You need to understand the, like the advantage you're getting by leveraging celebrity. Yeah. You want to have like negative CAC effects. Like as you get to market, you basically just leverage the organic audience to reach escape velocity faster.
Yep.
But I think,
but that's kind of that's only like one. There's one or two benefits. There's only really two benefits, and that's one.
Mm-hmm.
I get to that stuff faster, and then the second is I actually know good content, and I can make sure the social team actually does shit that works. Like those are really your two advantages, and everything else it's still a business you have to do. You know?
Yeah, it's all of the normal parts of running a business that people fail on.
Yeah, know? And to the point, like I think about this a lot. Like I spend a little bit of time on the Valuables brand. But like the money, the monetary consideration of, do I spend time doing stuff like brand deals makes more money. The media business side of stuff like makes more money. Even like agency stuff makes more money. And so you have to be like, all right, I want to put this time in, build this thing up over time. But like from a cash perspective, they're like completely right. That like, it's not as good of a business to sell those products, especially from a cash flow perspective. And if you're doing it, you're doing it for like other reasons or to build something that's more long-term.
Yeah. What is your objective with Valuables?
I look at it like I have my hand in all these brands. But like, it's hard for me to tell their story in my content for various reasons. And so I wanted one where like, I can just tell the story, whatever I want. And also I feel like as a creative and a designer and a creator, it's like, you kind of, there's no reason that you should be just have the ability to bring things you find interesting to life. And so I look at it like I looked at it with other brands I've worked on, where it's like, cool, over 6 or 7 years, this can become kind of like whatever you want it to be. But that's the timeline you have to look at.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like, am I going to do $1 million brand year one? Like, no, like I understand my time constraints. I understand like where we're at. But I want to start doing interesting things, like learn from it and like continue to scale it up and then not have, I'm not looking at the pressure that I want this brand to make more than the other things in my life next month. You know,
that's where you have crazy amounts of leverage though. Like you're kind of playing a long-term game and you don't need to rush it. This is where a lot of CPG founders get into, I think, mistakes. Also, if you raise any sort of money, it just accelerates the timeline. It creates,
or if your MOQ is 20,000, like, cool, I go make a pair of pants, I'm getting 200 of them. If you go make a drink, you're getting 20,000. That's like a very different.
Yeah, it's a different beast, you know? Yeah. For sure. I like the way that you're approaching it then, because you can kind of do it at your own time and put time and effort into the things that you really want to get out of it.
Well, and also see where fit is. Like, I think the biggest thing for me is like finding product market fit, where it's like, it's not simple. And as a creator, you have a huge advantage of that. Like you have the ability to talk about things. So I was like,
cool. You get feedback so much faster.
And like, I'm not in a rush of like what a brand wants to be. I don't have to be like, this is like, I feel like when you have a brand that are more personality driven, you're either a personality pushing a brand that like has its own concept, or it's a brand that's driven by the creativity of the personality. And I'm the latter, but I'm looking at like, cool, I'm gonna kind of take shots at things that I think are interesting or try, and I know it'll sell through over time. But then you find the one that has a bigger resonance than me, and that gives you the ability to lean into it. And then you get to do lots of interesting stuff along the way. And I've seen that even like the bags that I've been selling have like more resonance than the other stuff. And mm-hmm. like the economics are good, and like the ads work better. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's like, I wouldn't know that if I like was searching for the perfect thing and then never launching. I learned because I ordered, you know, 600 and said, we're going to start doing it, you know?
I think it's interesting actually for such a nascent brand with valuables, like how many SKUs you went deep on. Like there's a crazy variety.
Well, and that's just because of my background. Like I wouldn't recommend anybody do that, right? Like, so like I've worked with this other, like a women's wear brand for a long time, where we also have a large amount of SKUs. And I've also seen the, like basically the key inflection points of for that brand have been like viral items. Like things that like took on a life of their own, like allowed us to then move with that. And I was like, cool, since it's easy for me, I know all the people that have the right MOQs, I can design all these things, and I want to put together and figure that out and test different things. Like I want to go wide and see. And it's not what I expected in terms of like what worked and didn't. And I'm kind of testing through that. But it's like, that's also fun. Like I want to like say, hey, cool, I've got all this stuff. And now I'm like doing even like, I'm doing a chair. I'm doing a, like, it's just interesting. And like, what's nice is like, you know, you can sell enough from audience and from like basic e-com principles to like break even on basically everything. And so I don't want to put stuff out there just to put things out there, but I do, like, for me, it's idea hunting. And that supports like kind of who I am as a person and a creator, which is very different than I'm going to build and scale a $10 million brand next year, you know?
Well, I think as valuables starts to grow, one of the interesting things that I'm just thinking about now is the ability for you to leverage partnerships to actually accelerate the growth of that business, whether it's brands that you can just, you know, organically reach out to that would be good fits. Like you can't do that as a normal early stage brand.
Where even as a creator, I was seeing the kind of gigs I was getting. We're like, cool, right now I do advertisements for brands, right? I don't, but I've done a few where I've done like, hey, I've designed their merch capsule, or I put together a creative director to shoot, or I did whatever. And like, okay, I'm like, that's work. It's a little more interesting to me. I like creating things versus like just necessarily reading an ad. And I was like, cool, I want to position myself for that. I want people to be able to see what I make. And this is a vehicle for that. But also like with the niche, like with some of the iconography I launched with initially is specifically for those, like those concepts where I saw like all these brands were doing auto merch, right? Where you have like McLaren and Lambo had Rude, you know, all these different, like, people were kind of moving high end, but I was like, there's really not good stuff for like the traditional American brands there. The brand like I love, like we're not seeing like a great Dodge Hellcat capsule or like a great Ford Raptor or whatever. And I'm like, cool, I want to do that. Yeah. And I'm creating products that are going to get me like towards that. And like at least open the door for those conversations. And like, that's like having an angle. And
has that worked out?
Well, I was like, I'm just at the beginning of it, right? So the first couple months of putting that merch out, but like, I want to get that to where I'm like super proud of it. That's like exactly where I want it to be. And then like start to have that combo. But I feel like it happens organically, right? Like where I'm having conversations now with like, hey, I'm doing X with this car club or X with these people, like build the organic foundation and have that combo. Like I want to be having that combo in like 18 months, like once it's ready. And, but that's what's the interesting part is like, that was an angle, but that doesn't really overlap with my audience. Like I may have say 5-10% of my audience that likes that kind of stuff that might be into it, but the majority don't, right? Like if you're a value creator, you're creating so wide. Like, so it's like, unless I'm launching marketing software, there's probably nothing that really aligns with my full audience. That's an interesting thing to think about as a creator as well. Yeah. Like someone like Jake Paul is big enough, he can launch deodorant, or like they can launch some really mainstream SKUs, like Feastables, whatever that looks like. But if you're a niche creator, like not everyone's going to want your apparel, or like I did like Americana themed stuff. That's a small percentage of my audience. You got to know that and like understand that and realize that like it's going to impact how much of it you talk about in your timeline.
For sure. And like the growth potential of that business, at a certain point, you kind of tap out in terms of how much organic reach
exactly.
you have.
How
and you're
much
like,
creator helps.
I got to just grow this thing. Yeah. So I guess like in terms of when you're advising creators and you're talking about like how they can best monetize, do you kind of think about their audience like a funnel and you're like, what is at the end of that funnel?
Yeah. Also, what do they want to do? Like I very specifically like don't like to do, I don't want to have an agency. You know, I had an agency for like 5 or 6 years. Yeah. Well, as a creator, like you have a great agency and a great business. But I said specifically, I don't want to start and scale something like that again. I'm happy to like be in the mix on those kind of things. But I went through that experience and was like, cool.
It's tough.
Well, also like it depends where you're like, we did a product dev agency and like contract engineering. We got to a certain level. Now it still exists. So I'm just not in there day to day. It's about 40 people. And it's like a really interesting business and a good business. But like I've done that and I'm like, all right, I want to do something else more interesting. For a lot of creators, that probably is the solution, is get a team of experts around whatever you talk about from an expert perspective and like sell that service as a better margin, better performing business, yeah. right? And so like, it's like, if they're okay with doing that, but I was ready to admit to myself that like, I am more passionate about creating things and designing things than anything else. I want to build a business that allows me to spend time doing that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
With creators, you guys have to ask that question. Like, what do you want to do and what do you dedicate to? And how many videos can you make about it that work? That's like the real question, because the conversations I've ended up most in creators is like, how many videos, like, okay, you made 200 hoodies, but you only sold 37 and you have 1 million followers. How many videos did you make? Oh, I made 2 videos. I'm like, okay, well now that's 18 hoodies per video. So if you want to sell the remaining 200, you got to make like 8 more videos, whatever that is. People aren't doing that level of math, but like, that's kind of what this is.
It's that's
like
a projection. Yeah.
And also, can you do that? Well, how many stuff do you have to have in between? What does that look like? I see that with me. Like I realistically, my follower doesn't really care as much about my brand. Maybe they care about me building it. I could do probably a video a week and have that kind of work out in the flow. But that's sort of the max. So you start to be like, all right, well, cool. How much do I sell when I do that? You need other ways to scale the business. And so your ideal with a creator is you find something where you're doing a business that ties directly into what people want from it. I think Marcus from Minted in New York is like the best example of this, where like people are really into the lifestyle that he was talking about, into the things he's passionate about. He made a brand that's completely aligned with that. And he can make every single video talking about his brand. And if it's not, it's about working out. Say he has what, like a 50-50 maybe mix. That's like perfect, like creator product fit. And if you have that, then like you're really set up to do a creator brand.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side though, too, if you're an entrepreneur and you're going to start making content, you're almost like natively making it about your business.
Story. Yeah. Well, I think
Will Ahmed from Whoop, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's probably, I think everyone needs to know how to do that, because that's just a tool now. Mm. That's almost like a mandatory tool where it's like, it's a customer acquisition channel that like, that works. And I think if you're not making content, if there's not content from like a founder or a like a high level team member as part of that strategy from the beginning, it's like you're really leaving one of the last places of like arb on the table, you know?
Yeah, there's just so much opportunity and meat on the bone there.
And I think the interesting question is like, do you have to be a creator to start a business? No. Should most people who start a business be a creator? Like, yes. In the sense that like you are knowing what's going on with social and how social works is one of the biggest benefits you could have right now, where everything is content. All the ads you're running on Meta are content. Like everything you're doing for top of funnel, all your influencers, your UGC, everything is based on content. So if you are involved whatsoever in creating it, your briefs are going to be better. Your understanding and your quality standard for your team are going to be better. And I think that's just like one skill that if you have any like engineering background or more traditional business background, you just don't have, that is like super, super critical.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you. It's like a creative skill set. You're dialed into content. You have the ability to produce it. One of the things that we've prioritized at the agency, what I've done on my marketing team is like, I exclusively want people with design backgrounds because they're comfortable they're comfortable curating. They have taste and they can also execute on net new assets like relatively quickly.
That's one of the things I enjoyed most as we started to work together. It's like, oh, everyone on this team has taste. And like, which is like, it's funny, you just bring it up, you're like, oh, well, isn't that? And it's like, that's not typical. Like having worked with plenty of agencies and services and this and that, like that's not like an easy thing. And so actually I'm curious, so spinning the question back around, like I really respect the way you guys have integrated content into like what you're putting out, like as an agency, like what was that conversation like? You know, what was kind of the impetus behind like starting that journey?
Well, I mean, I think Jackson and myself, my co-founder, we've always like, we consider ourselves like high taste individuals, and that was always gonna be our positioning. Taste forward, like marketing, we kind of saw the writing on the wall. It was like every single agency is performance focused. They're like almost overly analytical. It's very actually easy to over-index on analytics.
Completely.
To report on ROAS, to look at the metrics. Like, and a lot of that is actually becoming automated now, where if you're a creative, you can be super dangerous because you can understand signal and what's working and what's not. Like, I think a lot of that can be learned. The stuff that's really tough to learn is taste. You have to immerse yourself in, like, you know, I think like an experience in an environment where you're exposed to things that like actually look good. And so we just started to hire for folks that had that.
When did you start making content like in the journey? Cause I remember like,
dude, it's been very recent for me personally.
Yeah. We're for the team in general. Like when was that become like a pillar? Like when was LinkedIn like, hey, this is a major part of our business?
12 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's been going really well. But I think like more generally, we saw the writing on the wall that marketing, like performance marketing, was just going to skew heavily creative. It's like, creative is the bigger lever you have to drive growth today for most consumer businesses. So we were like, we need to index on that. It started with just visual, like typography, iconography, design layouts, like just having taste in those ways. But now, as you know, it's like mostly short form video content. So that's kind of a little bit of a different skill set. But I think creatives, like people who are classically trained in design, they have taste. They're just like a lot. They can execute on that a lot easier.
Yeah, I think what's a conversation I have a lot that I think is really important for those people too, is they're always like, well, social media isn't going to show off my work the right way or not. I'm like, look, you just like start with carousels. Like I feel like the idea of like a creative carousel where like you take your design vision into this format that's like up to 10 images that can overlap or tie into each other, where one has to get people involved in the combo and the goal is to get people to the end of it. And you can tell any story you want within that visually is like such an ideal canvas for someone to like, and it's motion and static. I was like, if you like, feel challenged by social media, like just really lean into that, because it's like a very solid open creative canvas. So like I think anyone really creative can succeed at.
I think this is probably the lowest hanging fruit for big brands today. Like if you just look at their meta libraries, like the statics are so boring, they're cookie cutter. It's like, look at what you did with valuables. Yeah. You took like popular motifs and lockups and just like put it into the statics. And I think that just creates something that's like different.
Yeah, I'm actually really curious to like tap a little further into it. Like, all right, so like when you look at a big brand or you audit stuff, like what do you see wrong now typically? Yeah.
I just did an audit for ABC store in New York. Yeah. Are you familiar with them? Yeah, like they're a heritage, you know, carpet furniture business. And you look at their statics and it's like, I hate to do this on the podcast, but you know, like just it's a lot of this.
We'll bleep the name earlier.
It's a lot, it's a lot of the same, but like the cutesy music in the carousel, it's like stock, you know, music or whatever. And like you talk to the performance marketer behind it and like the vision that they're trying to execute on, then they outsource it. And it's like the end result is just not where it should be. So in my audit, we pulled references from like, you know, 1960s carpet furniture fashion catalogs. We had, you know, high fashion brands, like just and we used these references for statics, and it was just like, you know, it was a breath of fresh air. But really interesting, we'll probably lose that pitch because they want to skew and go, they want to overly index on performance, and the agency that's just going to like present to them a robust like data slide, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I'm like, hey, this is how you win though. We can do the other stuff. It's easy to index there.
But it's like, it's not what they want to hear. There's so much of that, like in that pitch process now. And it's funny because like I get brought into these conversations like almost as a third party now, when someone's trying to help pick an agency or want to get creative strategy for X, or, oh, we're paying $300K for this video shoot or this campaign. Like, how do we make the most of it? And it's actually crazy to see what the results are. Like back to the carousel point, I'm like, hey, if you have a video that performed on a brand, you have a brand that has millions of followers, you had some video hit and it's a tutorial or whatever. And I work with a lot of cosmetics companies. So I like see this in cosmetics a bunch where it's like, all right, this tutorial hit as a video. Could you just put this tutorial as a carousel, like run the same exact thing? And it's just like, you have repeatability if you've already gotten the imagery or can take a screenshot or have a formula. And it's just like, you have this other medium that like everyone's all in on video now. And I'm like, there's other medium that performs just as well. You can literally duplicate all the same things on because people consume differently. And then same thing on like, all right, when you're testing ad creative, it's like, all right, does this work as a video? Like, okay, well, let's do the carousel version. There's so many of these that are roughing. Yeah.
How, I'm curious, like from your perspective, just working with other brands, like, to what degree is this like a workflow problem? Because I think that's like half the battle.
It's a brief problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest ones is, so I have a formula I go and I write, cause I'm doing more and more campaign driven stuff now.
Yeah.
Like people, cause I've realized like I go to where there is like dollars to improve. That's always like when you are a consultant or you're never, you're like, okay, where is people spending dollars that could be spent better? And so people will spend a lot of money on shoots, $300K, $100K, all kinds of sums. And then you really, that comes to what assets are you getting out of this? And like, that's where I think most of these brands are going wrong. Cause even with, okay, we have an agency that does UGC for us. Okay, what are our assets? We get 20 assets a month or whatever that looks like. It's like, how do you make the most of that? And so I have this process I go into it where I'm like, okay, well, all right, what are the core assets of the shoot? And like, what is the art direction of it? And like, if there's no art direction for this, like it just shouldn't exist. Like there has to be like, and then you get into art direction or not versus like standout art direction. But then it's like, okay, what is the core assets? And then where's the social distribution of it? Like, all right, we do, but this is, these core assets like aren't just two posts. Like, can we make this 15 posts? Can we make this like, can we make this carousels and reels and TikTok, like, and email? And then what does that mean for the deliverables? And like, what is the shot list for each of those? And what's the hook for all of these? And like, okay, does, do any of the makeup artists or anyone have any followers? Can we pay them more to do a collab post? Right. It's like all this, like you map that out. And then it's the BTS, which is like the biggest one to add on to all of it, where it's like, all right. And then who is shooting the stuff to do the, like the behind the video to the video, or to like cut those other like reels in there. And like, and then with a lot of the big brands, okay, do you have a second account? If you don't have a second account where you're running tests or running like weirder content just to see, like you're kind of messing up. So how do we integrate that workflow? It's interesting to do.
A lot of these brands, they just don't have like those, the creative chops to even execute on that.
Or even little things. Like one thing I've been harping on a lot recently is like, okay, like you shot a big YouTube video and you're doing, a lot of brands doing YouTube now. And it's like, okay, you shot shorts from it, but like you just get like the little thing. Like, did you tag the related video on the shorts to the main? It's like some of the tactical level stuff is just really missing.
I think this is why like biggest opportunity right now, entrepreneurs to become more like creative directors and to have a heavy hand in like their marketing. And similar like for creators to kind of take the baton there too. Most of the creators you work with and speak to, like what are their backgrounds like?
Yeah, it's really diverse. Like I skew a little more towards just because like where my followers are is like creatives who have been like, hey, I want to create to give me more freelance opportunities.
They're well positioned to do that.
Faster. Yeah, which they really are. Cause, and the biggest thing, the reason I like harp on that to those people is I'm like, hey, if you are going for the same job and say that there is a minus designer and you're a B plus designer, an A minus art director and you're a B plus art director, but they have never posted anything on social media, and you can be like, hey, this video I did last week got 50,000 views. So when I make this content for you, like I know I'm going to make it in mind for performance on social media. Like even if you have a lower skill set, like that's a bid you should win because like you are going to help the brand achieve other objectives. And you basically have the proof of that, like on your page, like you become the de facto expert and just positions you. Same thing if you're going for a job increase or whatever it is. So I just look at like, it's in your own best interest to do that. Cause like you can basically, and if you then have that and you have the skill set and you're an A, then like you're invincible. You know?
How do you think about like quality versus volume?
Man, that's a, now everyone's talking about volume, which is, it really depends where you're at as a brand. We're like, I think it has to start quality in the beginning. But
well,
like,
let's talk creator though, actually.
Yeah. Oh, quality. Like, I think so the biggest dissonance there is building the muscle versus then what it takes to continue to succeed. So most people can't actually succeed at becoming a creator if they don't post every day for like 100 days plus. They just don't do it. I've noticed this, like with people that come out of Cut 30, which is like our coaching program, like, all the biggest success stories just never stop posting. Like Hans is probably the biggest, came out of that, posted, still hasn't. Jamal, who like we hired to come work in the program, like has not missed a day.
Is that just a question of like wanting it more basically?
It's just building the muscle of it. Yeah, I think it's just like, okay, you made this a thing that is a part of your life. It's like anchored in your life. You cut the time out for it. It's scheduled. And then I think like, so once you've done that, that's like point one. Most people don't even get to point one, but once you get to that, then it doesn't matter. Then it's like right now, if I was like, I'm going to post once a week, it would kind of mess up the way my fiscal setup is with like brand deals and stuff. But like, I would probably get the same objective if I was like, I'm gonna make one amazing piece of content versus I'm gonna make five pieces of content. And I think it could really go either way. And so I don't think volume matters like once you have resonance, but it's about what you have to do. So for instance, for me to be able to put in two branded posts a week, which is what I do, I need to fill it up with a lot of other stuff around it. If I was only doing one other video and I tried to do that, it wouldn't work. Or I'd have to shift to be doing much more expensive, like single brand deals. And it just didn't work that way. And so for a lot of creators too, it's also like, what objectives are you trying to achieve? But I know a lot of good creators who just do one post a week.
And do you feel like, do you have different, has momentum changed? Like, I'm curious.
I've become way more conscious as a creator as to what I want from my audience. Cause I was like really obsessed with growth in 2023. And I was like, oh, I'm growing really fast. And then 2024, I was like, oh, this isn't the audience I want. And so I want this very specific audience. I'd much rather not grow. Like I grew 100K last year. I grew like 300K the year before. And it was like, I was like, I only care. If you're not sharing me in your work Slack, like I don't want you as a viewer. Like that is, and any content I'm making that doesn't achieve that objective is not the right content for me. And having a million followers is not going to make me any more money than 400K. I'm at the top of the category I can be at for brand deals, for like marketing software. Really what I care about is resonance. Like, am I continuing to be shared by those people? Like and impacting how brands work. And that's And once I did that and I was like, the views don't matter. The only matter I matter is just like filling these slots and making sure that's happening was like the right perspective change for me. Cause people get obsessed with being like, I want to get bigger. Or I want to be like, I don't care about, I want to be more famous, more anything. Like I want to be the most resonant marketing and branding creator who people actually act on the work. And like, I'm in that and growth doesn't really matter.
Yeah. So that's a quality thing right there.
100%.
It's just like understanding the audience, producing great content. How much time do you invest into the content creation side of things?
Now it's gotten a little better just because I have a team. So it's like I'm shooting YouTubes every other week. And then I'm shooting like batched like other content. So I think it's luckily a little bit less than ever. Like this week I'm shooting content the whole week. So that's a little bit different. But I'd say we're going on, I'm probably in that like 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day in between content and scripting, briefing, stuff like that. So that's it's a significant amount of time and more than when I was just like making a video a day while I worked and whatnot. But like it's for the business it generates, it's good.
For sure. And it's been 2 years now, right?
Yeah, 2.5 years. And then YouTube was really what added to that. Like YouTube takes a lot of time. Like the research on it, the cutting of the videos, like the editing and working around that is significantly more of an undertaking than short form.
I'm really curious like your view on like LinkedIn versus IG, because the audience you mentioned, that's like a, it's a LinkedIn audience.
So what I've noticed is, yeah, but they don't do that. I think it's like the action's different. What's interesting is like, I look at like people, LinkedIn is a great follow-up to Instagram for me. So what I've noticed is that like people will not DM me on Instagram and ask for, oh, will you work on this project? Will you do this thing? Like, can I buy this? Whatever. But they will on LinkedIn. Like, so there's like a bottom of funnel component to like, oh, they see me on LinkedIn, they see the content coming up and they feel like they can reach out from a business perspective in a way that like they would never DM on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a positive, but like, I know, I think people are sharing Instagram links between themselves in group chats on Instagram and on Slack every day, all the time. And I don't think they're doing that on LinkedIn, like, but way more lightly.
Yeah, there is definitely a crossover there. I mean, even I think for creative teams, for sure, like with my creative team, I'm constantly sending them references from IG.
Yeah.
So you just like have that open flow of communication in a way that LinkedIn does. LinkedIn doesn't really promote sharing.
Yeah, and exactly. So it happens, but it's not like it's built into how we consume content that you're sharing IG stuff with your friends. That's also what IG wants you to do. Mm-hmm. And I like see the results. That was fun. Like before this, I was at a real estate agency and like I'm walking around, they have like a 20 person marketing team. I'm like, oh, we just did something from this video of yours yesterday. And it was just like, I'm like, yes, like that is exactly the like objective, you know?
Good. Yeah. Okay, so then flipping it then on the brand side, like quality versus volume, because I see a lot of brands that come through our funnel and they're very focused on volume. To a degree, it's necessary to like scale something like Meta. You just like need a velocity of assets, especially on the UGC side. But like they haven't gotten their fundamentals right with quality.
Yeah, I think like, and with that, it's I feel like anyone that's doing 8 figures or higher, like it's the volume demands are kind of crazy right now for Meta. And so you kind of have to be thinking about that. And with that, I think the core conversation is like, what are we doing from an art direction perspective that is really briefable through everything? Like can we establish like core creative direction principles or parameters or ideas or concepts that can make it into volume-based briefs where a bunch of different people are executing them and they're still on brand? I think is like the real challenge that's like that's happening now, where it's like that art direction will help you stand out, but like what does that framework look like for someone 2 steps down the funnel?
Yeah, I definitely think the marketing stack like in the future looks a lot different just in terms of like how we can automate things and how things get easier. But I do think like the throne seat is like if you can curate and if you have taste, really. So like if people need to cultivate that. I think taste can be cultivated.
Agree. Also, and then taking that and turning it into a brief is like, this is something I talk about a lot because I meet all these tasteful people, art director, creative directors who then cannot get it into brief, right? Because it's like, okay, you have to explain to a designer who is maybe not English as a first language, like in a lot of the cases, like how do you use your existing brand toolkit and how do you use this reference and not just copy it? And like to do that, like, and also communicate that in as few words as possible, right? And so, and it's like, okay, but these briefs are written and kind of explained in the loom, and it's like, and how is your lens as a person? And it's funny because one of the things I think has really helped me from that is like becoming a creator, because now I think in 60-second blurbs. I think in hook, 3 bullet points, finish. Yeah, exactly.
I'm a voice note to my marketing team. But by the way, just going back, like this is why I think working with designers and editors that have taste is important, because otherwise you're operating on 9th, 10th, 11th revision, and you're like, this is a waste of my time.
And that's why I'm enjoying like working with your team is like, okay, like I'm not doing that. Like, it's like I share something where I have an outline of it, and it would be, and if they didn't have the references for it, or we weren't working off like we have a shared Pinterest board where everyone's like kind of on the same page visually.
Yeah.
And that's all it took. It wasn't like I have to go explain like this era of advertising or whatever it is.
How do you pull references? I'm curious. Cause I think they're so all essential.
The time. Yeah. So extensively and all the time. So it's like, and it's like an activity.
You're like mining your, it's like scheduling your content. Yeah, you're like, I need,
cause it. I schedule scroll time. Cause like, I don't really consume a lot of content online, but I do it intentionally. So I'll be like, hey, I'm scrolling TikTok with an objective. Like, I'm pulling cosmetics references. I have different accounts. One thing I recommend everyone do is I have like 4 or 5 accounts on the different social networks, and I have different algos for each. So like, I do a lot of cosmetics work, and so I have an algo that I only follow cosmetics creators, cosmetics brands, to see what's in that Reels algo, because otherwise I would just never get it, right? And so same thing with the TikTok. So I'm doing that like intentionally, but like, yeah, I think I board a lot just like to have like mood boards. So I'll go make a Cosmos board and go into related, I'll move it into Pinterest or vice versa, and then go look at the related, because they'll show you those related pins, like they auto-generate. So I'll like do that for concepts like all the time. But then now we're trying to do more and more physical. Like, we just got, I just got like most of the Japanese Chrome Hearts magazines, like the Japanese edition ones. I got like almost all of them now from the, like the previous. So I'm just like trying to get as much other stuff, like not on a mood board, like not related to anything internet. Cause everyone's like, you starting to see the Cosmos board as a Pinterest board. It's like, it's just the same. Cosmos was good for a minute, and now if everyone's on there too, it's like, okay.
Yo, I feel the same way about, I know we were talking about this before, like brands like and trends, like especially with luxury, it's like once everyone kind of hops on, like you're kind of like, hey, this is done. Jacques Marie Mage, like
having
exactly. With JMM, Rude.
And so it's like, so if everyone sees the same stuff, like how are you referencing even out there? And it's funny because we got the Chrome Hearts ones because I'm doing all this leather product. I got like product references. Because they did actually a lot of interesting, like they did like women's handbags and like all this interesting stuff in a really interesting way. But it's like, you have to find those other points. And I think traveling is useful for that, you know, and just like...
Just getting different exposure.
Yeah, and just, but like also when you're there, like more books, like more mags, more things, and then like cutting them out and sharing them and like moving it. But yeah, like that is such a big part of the process. And also like my house is like, I got 4 of those big like 8-foot boards, and like I've given up a semblance of like of normalcy that like our whole house is whiteboards and the other. Yeah, exactly. Like... And it's just, but that's how it has to be, because it's like, it's so important, or else you're just thinking through the same ideas again and again.
What about, you know, we've definitely taken this approach at Darkroom, which is like our Instagram is going to become a mood board. It's like a source of inspo.
Yeah.
To what degree do you recommend this for brands?
I think the hardest part about it is like, there's always going to be some question on like copyright and stuff like that. But like, I think it's critical. Like, I post a mood board almost every week on the Valuable account, where like, I think it sets the tone for people to understand the expectations, and then shows off that like, people want to find their tribe on social media. They want to be like, oh, there's someone else like me. That's a huge part of the social media experience. Someone else feels what I feel. And you can achieve that visually. And I would say like definitely like why not? But it's like, you have to come at a different angle. Instead of being like, hey, I'm going to duplicate hidden, or I'm going to duplicate like, you know, welcome JPEG, or like any of these people that really do it, like really curious, like what is my unique angle on that? And like, you know, so for instance, like on mine, I'm like, I have this kind of like, I have these like visual themes where it's like, all right, like it's car culture, it's like Western culture. But then there's this sort of like Japanese, like Kill Bill, like almost like action figure, like portion of it. That's like a little bit like Eastern. And it's like, all right, cool. Like those are, if it needs to hit all those to like be a mood board, which is unlike any like board that someone else has. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are things that brands, I think, are talking about and thinking about at the highest levels. This is why I think like creative strategists are moving up towards the top of the food chain in the marketing, in the organization in general.
And the hardest part is like, how do you train that? Like, that's one thing, like everyone's trying to hire a creative strategist. And it's funny because you'll see people like, I'll be like, what does a creative strategist even do? And it's like, well, you know, like it's sort of like everything at this point. But all these brands are trying to hire it. The amount of creative director listings, creative strategist listings are like endless. And then you get a lot of people that want those jobs, but there's just a gap, because like, I'm like, really the only thing you're doing is briefing. It's like, you are preparing to brief, and you are doing the brief, and then you are making sure the brief was done right. And like, how do you train for that?
Yeah.
And you're in the middle of this. Yeah. What's your thoughts?
I mean, I think you can, you just have to start doing it. It's like anything else. Like, you just need to get exposure, and ideally you work underneath someone who has taste and just knows what they're doing. So you can kind of get references. But for me, like a really solid creative strategist has a number of different reference points. Like our creative strategists, we hire different types of consultants that have different like spheres of influence for them, so they can tap into them. You need a creative sounding board. That's why I think people gravitate towards your content, because it is inherently just a creative sounding board.
Exactly.
Board.
They can kind of like validate their own ideas. Like, I'm always trying to think of it now. Like, okay, can I give someone a framework to think with?
Yeah.
Like, hey, or like, you know, even I did that video like the other day. I was like, hey, you should brand your, trademark your ideas. You know, and it's just like, I'm just giving you something to think about your own business like through a lens.
The thing is though, with really good creative strategists, I think inevitably they're like, they understand the value of their skill set, and they're like, I'm going to start my own brand. And that's what happens with the best.
Or they're just getting paid like like, I mean, at this point, I'm basically like extremely high paid creative strategist, which is like, but it's all like, that's really like it, the, it's so crucial. Cause again, you were spending the money on those campaigns or on those ad performance or whatever. And the only difference is like, can you brief to people and then make sure they do it? And then the extent, cause I think when, to define a bit for people, if you're watching, like what that creative strategy role really looks like is, all right, so you need assets. You need UGC assets from, you know, creators that do like more impersonal content. You need your briefs for your influencers to be actually relevant to that specific influencer, plus have like a campaign theme and aligned to the theme. And you have all your ad assets and you have all your brand assets. And someone needs to determine like, what are the formats that are going to work? What are the hooks for all these? What are the through lines? How do they work together? And how are we making the most out of every one of those pieces of content? And that is like a staggering workload.
That's a full-time job. I've been staggering. So yeah, I think that's a perfect definition. I think the role is starting to evolve into more of like a head of marketing in the way that we're positioning it, because you have this, you're pulling references, you're delegating your briefing, you have like people who are executing on the work underneath you. And then for me, it's like, why should I have a head of performance that's working with that creative strategist?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't the creative just be able to be proficient in return on ad spend and marketing efficiency ratio and click through rate and all these things that are just going to make them more effective?
Well, all that, again, to your point earlier, that data is all being generated now. Like it's getting more automated. You're actually seeing a bunch of this. You can actually view a dashboard in the future of like actually gives you, these are our performing assets. This is the reason. Yeah. Like it's actually decent where it was not decent for a minute. But the other interesting, it's interesting you talk about the head of marketing role, because I've actually thought a lot about this recently, because like I have like a framework when I go in to evaluate a brand, because I'll get brought on and do like due diligence on a deal, or hey, if we want to do a turnaround, what does this brand strategy look like? And I would run through like my matrix, which is like, okay, what are they doing for SEO? What are they, you know, what is happening on performance marketing? What's happening on the, and you run through all these things as traditional marketing with merchandising, you know, retail, like event strategy. And basically that's what you'd hire a director of marketing and basically have a plan or an agency for all these programs. That was like the former marketing lead. Now it's like, cool. Could there, is there just a person who's briefing? Is that really, is the 90-10?
I actually think that's where it's going though, because honestly, I just went through this on my team. It's like, yeah, you have these technical like functions within the marketing organization that people just like want to like throw up their hands and be like, no, fuck this. SEO is totally one of them, but it's so essential to on-site strategy and the type of content that you're putting on the website, which filters into what you're putting out in terms of UGC and briefing. So I think it's all really interconnected. The thing is like the time to understanding that. So creative strategists need to be like leveled up and upskilled, but I think it's a task that certainly can be done. And for me, like if I'm leading a team, I want someone who has taste. Like that's essential for me.
Well, also there's just so much. I mean, look at marketing teams only have so many hours in the day, and the amount of time it takes to brief the amount of assets you need. Like one thing I also end up in a bunch of conversations about is like, hey, do we need more creative or do we need to fix the funnel? Right. And so, and you look at these websites or whatever, and it's like, hey, if we just took a intentional performance and art direction look at every single touch point we have with a consumer, from their shipping email to like the landing page, the checkout page, the product page, to the e-commerce photos, whatever, would we actually get more value out of that than adding more creative? And like, cool, that's a great idea. We identified these 14 things, but now we need a concept and a brief for all of those. And it's just like the amount of briefing at, again, anywhere over, anywhere in eight figures plus is like, to make it good is insane.
It's insane. Yeah. And that's where I think some of it is just like infrastructure, because even at the highest level, like the brands, they have these like bottlenecks in terms of how they're producing content. That's why they outsource to agencies. But I think for me, it's just like you need to consolidate within Notion. The tech stack is like Notion, Figma. And then if you're a consumer, it's the Shopify ecosystem, basically. But for me, ops are important, and then it's kind of the people that are installed in the positions to be able to execute on the briefs.
What is what have you been working on recently, or like any projects or campaigns that have had like really interesting creative?
I think what I'm most excited about, like where I sit at the agency, is just like thinking about what, because we were just talking about this earlier. It's like no agency actually markets themselves really well. So I've been most excited about the references that we're using for our content. And that's what's getting me really fired up, because I think it's the biggest white space. Like I talk to many consumer brands all the time. They all have incredible branding. They all have really interesting concepts. And they're all in really saturated competitive spaces. And it's just getting more competitive.
Man, there's so many amazing agencies where I go to their website, I look at the work, and I'm like, wow, this is really good. And then there's no
social
marketing. Yeah. Actually, I'm curious too, because you were talking about you're going to Cannes, which I think is an interesting move as like in being like part of this new generation of agencies. Like what was the strategy there? What's the kind of the thought there?
Cannes is where like all of the, I think agency high level deals get done, like best technology providers between like, you know, Criteo and Amazon and Meta. So there's just like a lot of business that's happening, but it's also like a great place to create content, which is why I was like, dude, we have to do it. So last year was my first year actually going. All of the big honchos in the agency space, like for the most part. So you're getting exposure. Like Darkroom is definitely like new kids on the block in the face of like VaynerMedia or Dentsu or, you know, S4 Capital. So that was pretty cool. And then it was cool to know that like, hey, you're kind of on the radar and to understand like what the landscape is with the agencies because you have so many different derivatives and types. But I think for me, it's like, it's really more of a partnership thing, a content thing, and to get a sense of like where the market's moving.
I think it's interesting just this like old agency versus new agency scenario that like is happening where everyone kind of knows roughly these, you know, Wieden and Kennedy, Saatchi, all these, like they know all like these exist. They still have some of these like big name contracts, but then like a lot of the really tactical volume based work is like not happening there. And
it's hard when you have these old organizations to like really move things forward. It's almost impossible. It's so hard for me to do it at an 85 person agency.
Yeah.
Like I have to have these offsites and you have to have like an operator in the business who's like forcing things forward. That's a lot of my job.
It's just so hard as soon as you get to like, I mean, you start to get 40,000 employees,
operators out. It's like, how are you actually making change in a fast enough pace?
And it's just interesting to think about basically that entire industry feels like almost like up for grabs in the sense that like all this money that flows into all these, like into all these places, all the way those brands market themselves are in this like Ad Age, Ad Week world that is like not read by the new generation, right? Who are reading like Rachel Carton's newsletter or they're reading Hyper or they're reading whatever, they're getting their news from like, it's a different segment that interprets the industry. And I'm curious like what that swap over looks like. Do all of these small agencies or the more interesting people just get gobbled up into that previous infrastructure? Do those agencies really learn how to position and market themselves like in this kind of new world? Because that's the funniest thing I've noticed is I get hit up by all these people that work at those companies who are trying to figure out if they can make content or if they should make content. And I'm like, look, if you're working at an agency that does not want you as a, like to make content about the work that you're doing, like they don't fucking get it. And if you're good enough, you basically need to be like, do I want my job security of that? Or like, is my career kind of more important? But it's so interesting how few, like the fact that there's not like some popping VPs at all these places, like really driving the marketing conversation. Instead, the marketing conversation is driven by like Ashwin and myself and like Alex Garcia and like the woman who does stuff about advertising.
The brand fathers.
It's almost bizarre.
Changing.
Yeah.
The game's definitely changing. I mean, I'll tell you from my perspective, like how I think about it, because, you know, I've considered all of those paths. Like we get hit up, you know, by acquisition targets pretty, you know, frequently.
I can imagine, because you're right in that sweet spot.
We're in that sweet spot. I considered hiring creators full-time at the agency to run that function. Actually, I don't know if you know Kate, the girl who runs on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
She's a good friend. She was going to work at Darkroom, and then her creator career really took off. It's great that she did not end up working at the agency. You know, I've considered all these paths. Jackson and myself were like, we need to do this ourselves. Like, we need to basically, you know, develop the muscle on our own if we want to have like the most latitude and leverage to be able to grow this business. And I think for me, like I see the avenue to just marketing like a consumer brand, like a creator, in a B2B space that, you know, you command pretty high ACVs, like big contracts. Most of those big agencies, they have crazy relationships. Like they hold a lot of the CMO relationships at, you know, the Fortune 500s and enterprise clients. That holds a lot of weight. But I think if you're a scrappy agency that's coming up on the scene and you market in a forward way, it's a tale as old as time. Like you're going to win business.
It's just interesting. Like Jackson probably gets more views on LinkedIn than like any major agency employee. Maybe there's like one or two.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's such a, what a awesome position to be in.
Yeah, you know? For sure. And just Jackson's, I think a microcosm of this point. Designer, graphic designer by trade, learned marketing, you know, entrepreneur as well. And like, I think shifting into content creation was just so easy for him. He makes UGC assets for our top performing brands. They're always top performing assets.
That's great.
Just like got the taste,
you know,
like
you begin to get the
yeah.
And you just hook that shit. And that's funny. Like I ended up at last place I was working at too, I was like starting to, like I'm doing the tutorial videos. I was like doing some of the assets. And you're just like, it's just so much easier to be like, yeah, okay, I can just slam this thing down. I can put the neck rig on, you know, and you can do it.
Yeah, you're like, let me show you how it's done. Curious from your perspective, like where is consumer headed? Because, you know, I was just in Portugal. I like go to the supermarket there. There are no CPG businesses. It's no, the usual suspects. Yeah, so, yeah. And then, you know, we have this interesting culture here in the US where it's like, you can launch anything. Everyone's launching something.
Yeah. And it's also, there's like it's funny. Someone was talking to me the other day about like, they were like surveying, you know, there was like something data point they had. It was like, okay, like last year, like all the Gen Z girls were buying like a fun little beverage. And this year it's like, they're just kind of grabbing a Diet Coke. Like people are tired of the paradox of choice. And it's like, it just swings back and forth. But I think like really the retailers are beginning to see that like the more unique that they range and the more stories they tell and the more involved they are with, oh, you can find this brand at this place, like the better that is for them. So I think we've like changed the buying nature of like a significant amount of US retail in a way that will never go back. And so I think it's like, there's always this kind of new opportunity, and really just comes down to the economics of like, can you bootstrap or like not raise a ton of money to like run and scale these brands? Which in CPG in particular is like super hard.
Really hard.
And like probably isn't worth it. Like as for like a lot of those businesses to continue. Same thing like apparel, if you don't have like a really distinct vision, like is it like really like kind of necessary? And so you have to kind of look at where those white spaces are. I think it gets more regional just because I say this because TikTok and Instagram are both excellent at giving you regional content. Places where you live, places where you travel. And so I think there are brands that haven't quite leveraged that yet, that if I wanted to be the number one, you know, bottled cold brew brand in the Pacific Northwest, you could probably leverage social media to really smash that in a way you couldn't smash becoming a really popular cold brew in America. And so I think like there's some area there for brands to succeed.
Yeah. And then on the luxury front too, I want to just hit this before we're at time. Like how do you think luxury has changed? Cause it started as like something for royalty, and it's totally evolved. You obviously talk about it a lot.
Yeah, this is something I think about a lot too, because a lot of brands like want to define themselves as luxury, and a lot of luxury brands are trying to like think about their resonance to customers. And so I end up in this conversation. So I feel like the old generation of luxury is actually like in a really interesting place, in that now anyone can make something that's at the quality level of what those luxury looks like. You get brands like incumbent brands can take your time and make a bag as good as like full on traditional luxury brands. Same thing with furniture, same thing with apparel, same thing with like any of the basic things you would consider like a luxury soft good, a luxury home good. You can now work with the same suppliers and manufacture the same exact thing. And then they have this massive markup, like especially over the COVID era, prices just like went absolutely nuts. They were milking this era for as much as they could. And so now you basically have consumers separated into these two categories. One where like that logo matters so much that they'll pay the premium for it, which I think is shrinking. But also the people that are being like, hey, I didn't actually want the luxury brand of the logo. I just wanted an experience that good, which is less consumers than I think they'd like to admit. Cause like a lot of those brands like offer that value, but like people don't choose to consume it. And so it's just like really interesting middle ground that either the luxury brands are going to like come back to a more standard level of price to try to achieve some level of ubiquity, or some of these other brands are going to be like have to raise more higher than where they're at, but like invest in brand over the next like 5 or 10 years. Cause I think that's the hardest part people don't think about for luxury is time. Like
you have to be in the market for a long time. This is why I think it's almost impossible as a startup to be luxury or to try it.
You have to think about like it generationally.
It's almost like by definition impossible. Like I think about Hermes, like from a luxury perspective, and they're doing it. They've obviously, you know, it's a heritage fashion house. It's been around forever, but like they're totally taking a different approach to LVMH in that like it's all hand done. These craftsmen have been around for a while. They're treated really well. Like I think to me, that's like the old style, the old world of construction, which is like inherent to luxury, or it's like material based, which you kind of mentioned. It's kind of an even playing field unless you have like a Richard Mille.
Yeah, like where it's some like rare in particular. Materials.
Yeah. Well,
they, I don't know how to think about this is I tell people, you don't want to start a luxury brand. You want to start a family business, right? Like, cause the idea like luxury is like generational. You need to start a business with the idea that your kids are going to inherit it and run it to then have it be luxury. Like if you have that mind state, like you could potentially create something with that, like with that perspective. And if you don't, you probably can't compete at that level, but you could still begin that journey. And like, and also that journey like takes a minute. And so like, that's okay to do it. But like, that's the perspective you have to succeed in luxury. Cause you're competing against, I use Moncler as an example. Moncler is focused on Gen Z and they do all these initiatives. They do like Moncler Genius and they do collabs and they do whatever. Cause they're saying there's gonna be like two inflection points in your life for anybody where you may consider buying a $1,400 fucking ski jacket. And they are gonna be like, we are gonna market to you for decades until that point arrives where you, for some reason, need that ski jacket and you have that money, and then we will be there. And that is a approach that like, how do you compete with that?
You know, you can't. You can, I mean, as I think as a startup to be luxury, it's like, it's borderline impossible.
Well, I always look at like, there's a progression where it's like, you start as a designer brand. You succeed because of the impact of your designs. You can charge a premium because your designs are that good, or the artisanry of it is that good. So basically I'll put like a bespoke brand where you do custom at a level of artisanry that's amazing, or you put designer where you execute and people buy, pay a premium because your stuff looks that good. And so those are two starting points with which you can get to luxury over time. So if you then take that bespoke brand and you execute for all these people, and eventually you branch into an equal quality level, like ready to wear or whatever, like you can ascend into like a luxury brand over time. And the same with the designer brand, where like you have your hits or your misses, but you begin a consistency level of cultural relevance, adoption, and then resale value is like the key one to add on there. It's like luxury purchase is an asset. Like I buy a Louis Vuitton bag, I can sell it for 60% of what I bought that probably for the rest of my life.
Retains
its
value.
And so as a designer, like you can achieve that same thing in Grailed or Depop or whatever, but you have to actually be that desirable. And there needs to be a story there for it. So if you as a designer climb that, achieve that same level of resale value, so then you can begin to enter that tier of luxury. And that's like, I think just too long of a window for most people to want to think about brand building.
Yeah, no, it requires, you need to be thinking timeless, and you need to have like the longevity to be like, hey, this is minimum 10-year play for me, which I think like the older I get, I'm like, you kind of want to be in businesses for a long time, you know? Good. It's just like,
yeah, I think it's the way people should look at it. We just have this culture now where it's like, oh, I'm gonna start this thing, I'm gonna sell it,
I'm gonna sell it.
Yeah, like that's not what I look at. Like even I looked at like, I'm starting a brand, I'm like, I don't expect to hit where I want to hit with it for like 6 or 7 years, and that's completely fine. And I plan like that. And you make decisions based on that versus saying, oh, I'm going to invest all this money. If I don't get this return, put yourself in this crunch. But then you look at it and like, all right, if I get to that point 6 or 7 years from now where I'm at this operating basis I want to, do I want to turn that over? Or do I want to be like, hey, is this something I want my son to do in 20 years? You know, and then what does that look like? And it's just a different perspective that I think we're thinking a little bit longer, which we should think about because we're probably also as a generation going to like live extra long, which is a whole nother addition to this, right? We're like, okay, what do you think about when you can still work at 75?
It's true. I look back at I know you do a lot of suitcase reviews. You know Floyd, those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I've gotten close with them. Yeah, they're out of Germany. They they do a separate like bag and soft goods company.
Yeah, they have the hat and all that too and some stuff. Yeah.
And then they were just like, yeah, this is fun. If you go to their office, it's like Floyd, that brand like is Bern, the founder. It's like him. It's just like his vibe. And yeah, they just like launched it, and you know they. It was a side project.
I think they would thrive as a kids brand. That's a separate conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Oren, thanks so much, man.
Yeah.
This was awesome. Excited to continue at Shopify tonight.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.